Let's go in our Bibles, the book of Genesis, chapter 47. Genesis chapter 47 this morning. We're actually going to pick up the story at the end of chapter 46. We're going to start in verse 31. We'll read down through Genesis 47, 31. Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, "I will go up and tell Pharaoh and will say to him, 'My brothers and my father's household who are in the land of Canaan have come to me. And the men are shepherds, for they've been keepers of livestock, and they've brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have.' When Pharaoh calls you and says, 'What is your occupation?' you shall say, 'Your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth even until now, both we and our fathers, in order that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians.'" So Joseph went in and told Pharaoh, "My father and my brothers with their flocks and herds and all that they possess have come from the land of Canaan. They are now in the land of Goshen." And from among his brothers he took five men and presented them to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to his brothers, "What is your occupation?" And they said to Pharaoh, "Your servants are shepherds as our fathers were." They said to Pharaoh, "We have come to sojourn in the land, for there is no pasture for your servants' flocks. The famine is severe in the land of Canaan. And now, please, let your servants dwell in the land of Goshen." Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is before you. Settle your father and your brothers in the best of the land. Let them settle in the land of Goshen. And if you know of any able men among them, put them in charge of my livestock." Then Joseph brought in Jacob, his father, and stood him before Pharaoh. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Jacob, "How many are the days of the years of your life?" And Jacob said to Pharaoh, "The days of the years of my sojourning are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life. They have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their sojourning." And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from the presence of Pharaoh. Then Joseph settled his father and his brothers, gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramses, as Pharaoh had commanded. And Joseph provided his father, his brothers, and all his father's household with food, according to the number of their dependents. Verse 13. Now there was no food in all the land, for the famine was very severe, so that the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan languished by reason of the famine. And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, in exchange for the grain that they bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. When the money was all spent in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, "Give us food. Why should we die before your eyes? For our money is gone." And Joseph answered, "Give your livestock, and I will give you food in exchange for your livestock if your money is gone." So they brought their livestock to Joseph, and Joseph gave them food in exchange for the horses, the flocks, the herds, and the donkeys. He supplied them with food in exchange for all their livestock that year. And when that year was ended, they came to him the following year and said to him, "We will not hide from my lord that our money is all spent. The herds of the livestock are my lord's. There is nothing left in the sight of my lord but our bodies and our land. Why should we die before your eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for food, and we, with our land, will be servants to Pharaoh. And give us seed that we may live and not die, and that the land may not be desolate." So Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh. For all the Egyptians sold their fields because the famine was severe on them. The land became Pharaoh's. As for the people, he made servants of them from one end of Egypt to the other. Only the land of the priests did he not buy. For the priests had a fixed allowance from Pharaoh and lived on the allowance that Pharaoh gave them. Therefore, they did not sell their land. Then Joseph said to the people, "Behold, I have this day bought you and your land for Pharaoh. Now here is seed for you, and you shall sow the land. And at the harvests you shall give a fifth to Pharaoh, and four-fifths shall be your own, as seed for the field, and as food for yourselves and your households, and as food for your little ones. And they said, you have saved our lives. May it please the Lord, we will be servants to Pharaoh. So Joseph made it a statute concerning the land of Egypt, and it stands to this day that Pharaoh should have the fifth. The land of the priests alone did not become Pharaoh's. Thus Israel settled in the land of Egypt, in the land of Goshen. And they gained possessions in it, and were fruitful, and multiplied greatly. And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years, so that the days of Jacob, the years of his life, were 147 years. And when the time drew near that Israel must die, he called his son Joseph and said to him, if now I have found favor in your sight, put your hand under my thigh, and promise to deal kindly and truly with me. Do not bury me in Egypt, but let me lie with my fathers. Carry me out of Egypt, and bury me in their burying place. He answered, I will do as you have said. And he said, swear to me. And he swore to him. Then Israel bowed himself upon the head of his bed. You know, nobody likes being different, unless you can be different with somebody else. It kind of loses some of its effect that way. But if somebody's different with us, then we don't mind being different. But we don't like standing out by ourselves. We took, the little girls and I took a train trip yesterday down to Cairn University. And we met the family down there. They were at a concert. And on the way down, we kept stopping at different train stops. And all these teens kept getting on the train. And they were all wearing white. And a lot of the girls had like sparkles all over their face. Some up, some down, just kind of, you know, when you go out, you usually don't put sparkles on your face. You don't like to stand out. You don't like to look different. Unless everybody else on the train has sparkles on their face, and they did. It was just kind of strange the way that works. You know, we don't like being different unless we're able to do it with somebody else. But I think it's even harder when we are different. And we draw attention to the fact that we're different. That nobody likes being different in the first place. Whether your eyes are a different color, or your ears are big, or you're wearing the wrong thing, you're dressed up, you're dressed down. You don't like standing out, but you're not going to announce it. You're not going to go out of your way to draw attention to the fact that you yourself are different. But sometimes, especially with regard to the people of the blessing, somebody needs to call that forth from the people and say, you know what? We are different. We will do things differently. We are different. We must be different. And bringing that group into solidarity and bringing them together and say, we will be different together. And that's what we have in this passage as Israel is moving from Canaan down into Egypt. They're coming down together. We've looked at the different lineages as they've laid out. 70 different souls coming with Jacob down into Egypt, out of the promised land because of reason of the famine. And they're coming down as a group. They're not just coming down as 12 separate tribes. They're coming down as the sons of Israel. In fact, toward the end of this passage, we'll see that it refers to them for the first time as a nation, where it says in verse 27, Israel settled in the land of Egypt, and they, that is the nation of Israel, gathered possessions in Egypt. So they're coming down as a group, and the whole point of this passage is as a group, coming down into this land, a place where they don't fit. They're not going to fit, and they're not going to fit on purpose. They're going to stand out because, in fact, they are different. Early in the passage, we're going to see that Jacob recognizes that he himself is different. But Joseph, through the course of the passage, becomes the one who stands in front of the group and says, guys, hang on to your identity. Don't lose your identity. Don't let it mix with the world around you because you're something special. You're the people of God. You're called to be different. So in fact, be different. Be different. That's what we have going on here in this passage. And I think it, as we look at this, we'll see that difference is most notable when God's people are in fact different. It's not really that profound. You can recognize the difference when you are in fact different. Okay, this is just elementary stuff, and it's meant to be that way on purpose. Because I think sometimes I still struggle with wanting to fit in with everybody around me. I still want to have the expectations of what the world expects for life to look like. I don't want my life to look all that different from the lives of those around me, because different means that I have a different set of values. Different means that I have a different set of expectations. Different means that life is going to look different for me and I'm going to stand out. But the difference is most noticeable when God's people are in fact different. What I want to look at this morning is that this passage gives us five distinguishing realities of the people who are called to bear God's blessing, who are in fact chased down by the goodness and mercy of God that the psalmist says would pursue us all the days of our life until that day we're translated from this life to the next life and we dwell in His house forever. There's five distinguishing realities that we see from this text of those who are the people of God, those blessed by God. We see in verses 31 through 34 of chapter 46, the end of the chapter there, that we are in fact called to be different together. We're called to be different together. As the story picks up, Joseph and Jacob have been reunited. They've embraced, they've kissed, and Jacob now says, I'm ready to die. My life has found resolution. Things are good. I'm ready for my inheritance. Joseph then picks up in his speech and he addresses them. We can see that their identity is corporate because it's reflected in Joseph's concern in verse 31. Joseph said to his brothers, he said to his father's household, I'm going to go up to Pharaoh and I'm going to talk to him and I'm going to tell him that my brothers and my father's household, who were in the land of Canaan, have come to me. He says, guys, let me talk to you. Family, let me talk to you. Crew, come around. I've got something I need to say to y'all. All of you need to hear this. This is as important for the 6-year-old as it is for the 60-year-old. I've got something to say because this applies to you. Each one of you individually and all of you corporately. As you all have come into this land as strangers, as pilgrims, as sojourners, there's something that y'all, you each one individually, and all of you as a group, need to know. And so he starts to address them with a concern that's corporate in nature. It's reflected in their titles. In verse 32, it says, I'm going to go up to Pharaoh, and I'm going to tell him, these guys, this group of men, these people, are shepherds. They're keepers of livestock. He says in verse 34, they're shepherds by training. That is, from their very youth, they've learned how to do this. They're shepherds by habit. They've done it even up until now. And they're shepherds by heritage. It's not just they and their training and their habit that this is their identity. This is who they were before any one of them existed. Their dads were shepherds before them. Their granddads were shepherds before them. This is just who this people is. This is their identity as a group as they come down into Egypt. Another one of their corporate titles in verse 34, Joseph says, now listen, when Pharaoh asks you, what do you do for a living? Here's how you're supposed to answer him. Your servants are shepherds. He says, all of you together, each one of you individually and all of you as a group are called upon to recognize that yourselves are the servants of Pharaoh. And so they put themselves together, under his leadership at this point. The fact that they're corporately engaged in this identity is also reflected in the third person references that were given here in the text. It says, they have been, they have brought, it's their herds, all that they have. As Joseph is talking to Pharaoh, he's using one word that identifies the entire group. These guys, they've been in Canaan, they've come down to us, they've brought all that they have. And he's referencing them as a single group. It seems like we're belaboring something here, but the point is this. Pharaoh, we've got a group here that has come out from a different place, and they've landed here, and they're going to be here for a while. This group that doesn't necessarily belong here, that doesn't necessarily fit here, they've come. They are here, all of them together. They're different, all of them. They're all like each other, but they're all not like everybody who's here. Their identity is corporate. Their purpose is to remain distinct. Joseph says, guys, here's what you're supposed to say to Pharaoh, verses 33, 34. When he asks you, so what's your occupation? You need to tell him that you're shepherds. Look at what he says there, verse 34. You shall say, your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth, even till now, both we and our fathers. Tell him this in order that, for this purpose, so that you may dwell in the land of Goshen. Okay, so they go down to Egypt. The land of Goshen is like a state within the land of Egypt. It's kind of like Pennsylvania. You come out here and you live on this road and you're a part of a township, but you're not a part of the borough. You're a part of the borough, you're a part of the school district, but you're not a part of the commonwealth or whatever. I don't even understand this stuff yet. But down in Egypt, they had some of the same kind of manipulations. They're in the land of Egypt. The land of Goshen is a borough or a township or whatever. It's a part of that. It's a sector of it. So it's they know where they're going. And he says, guys, this section of Egypt known as Goshen, from your perspective, it's up over here. Canaan, Sinai Peninsula, Goshen. Right over on the edge, the Nile Delta going down. Actually, up is called the Lower Nile. Down is called the Upper Nile because this is higher in altitude than when it comes down to the sea, the Mediterranean Sea, the Lower Nile Delta. So they're found over here in the land of Goshen. They're off to the side geographically within the nation of Egypt. They're not in the heart. They're not in Memphis. They're not in the capital per se of Egypt. They're off to the side, a very lush part of the land. But it's a part that's on the outskirts. So if New York City was the place to be, they'd be living in New Jersey. Okay? They wouldn't be in the heart of Manhattan. They'd be off to the side a little bit. And Joseph says, now listen, guys, he gives it a purpose clause. He introduces it by a purpose clause. You need to say that in order that, for the purpose of dwelling off to the side, not plunging yourself into the middle of a culture from which you're called to be distinct. One writer notes that Jacob was in Egypt for 17 years, but not for a moment was Egypt in Jacob. Jacob always knew that he was different, that he didn't belong to this society. He knew where he fit, and it wasn't here. They're purposely on the outskirts of the mainstream. Joseph says, now listen, you have to understand something. Verse 34 at the very end. Every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians. We don't have a lot in Egyptian writings and Egyptian literature that explains this understanding of the Egyptians not liking shepherds. In fact, even later in the text, it says that Pharaoh himself has flocks, has herds, that he's looking for some good guys to take care of. So it's not that they were opposed per se to somebody shepherding or keeping track of livestock. It's just kind of, the best they can surmise is it was kind of a, the Egyptian mindset was more agrarian, agricultural. They were settled. They didn't like roaming around. In fact, it was even more metropolitan. They appreciated the cities and they congregated there, these centers of society. And they kind of viewed the Canaanites, the nomads up there in the desert, as people who were kind of in it for themselves, cutthroats. People that were not so much getting along with society because they didn't so much fit with society, because they didn't like society. So Joseph says, be sure you mention your shepherds, that you fit better on the outskirts of their society, and they're going to understand. In fact, they'll appreciate it, that you're not trying to come and barge in and horn in on their part of the pie there. Joseph recognizes that his family's time in Egypt was a time of sojourning. It wasn't an arrival for a permanent destination. That's why he carefully takes the time to lay out for his brothers, don't get too attached to this land. You're going to get a good piece of property. The story goes on, it says they get possessions there. In fact, at the end of the story, it says that they're fruitful and multiply. It echoes the words that are given in Genesis 1, verse 28, when God created man, and he blessed them and said, be fruitful and multiply. And in this place, that's not the promised land, but the blessed people receive blessing in a place that doesn't even belong to them, because they remain distinct. They're purposely maintaining their purpose. They're purposely maintaining their purpose to be distinct from the people of Egypt so that they can bring the blessing of God to the people of Egypt. Why is Egypt succeeding at this point? There's a famine from Egypt to Canaan. It says throughout all the earth at this point. There's something big going on in this region. Why does Egypt still have food? Not because of the Nile River. Because of Joseph. Because God put his man in this place and told him about the future and prepared to save not only Egypt, but also a small band of nomads who were going to be relocated from their land of promise for 400 years until God decided to take them back. They're being blessed because God had brought a man upon whom he had purposed his blessing. Remember back when God calls Abraham out of Mesopotamia? He says, I'm going to call you to go to a land that I'm going to show you. And I want you to know, Abraham, I'm going to bless you, and I'm going to make you a blessing so that all nations on earth through you will be blessed. Joseph seems to understand the necessity of maintaining their distinction in this foreign land as a people who don't belong in this foreign land, because they as a people are responsible for bringing the blessing of God to these people who do not in fact know him, who do not in fact have relationship with him. But the thing is, they get to do it together. Aren't you thankful for this, what we have on a Sunday morning, on a Wednesday evening? The fact that we get to come together. Each one of us have been out in the world throughout the week. We've been doing our thing. We've been bombarded by sickness, by health, by finances, by relationships, by temptations, by you name it. And we've been taking the hits by ourselves. And we come back in here and it's like, I can let my guard down. Because while I'm different from all that out there, at least I fit right here. This is a place where I can recharge. This is a place where I can relax. This is a place where I can be refreshed. He says, you're different, but you got to be different together. And that's why in the book of Hebrews, he says, don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together, as the manner of some is. But be careful that you're coming together and provoking one another together unto love and good works, so that as you go back out into your communities, one by one by one, you can do what you're called to do in remaining distinct, but only as you come back together to be different as you go back out. A second distinct reality for those who are different recipients of the blessing is the fact that our security is anchored not so much in our own work as in the workings of a mediator. Interesting how God sets up this for His people throughout His story. As we come to this passage, the first time Israel's identified as a nation, as a corporate whole, they have a mediator who's working on their behalf. In verses 1 through 6, Joseph goes in and talks to Pharaoh. Joseph brings his brothers in to talk to Pharaoh. Joseph brings his father in to talk to Pharaoh. In verse 5, verse 6, when the brothers get done talking to Pharaoh, Pharaoh turns to Joseph and says, okay, here's what I want you to do for your brothers who are standing here in front of me. When God begins to deal with His people on a whole, He gives to them a mediator, one who goes between, one who fixes the welfare of His people. As He brings them out of Egypt, He names one man, Moses, who becomes the mediator. God says, gather all the people to the mount. And He starts to speak to them, and they say, this is too big. God is too much. Moses, you go up and talk to God for us, because if He keeps talking to us, we're going to be destroyed. And one man goes up and talks to God. And God says, now Moses, here's the way we're going to do it. You're not going to be around forever, but I'm going to set up a group of mediators for my people forever. In fact, I want you to situate your camp so that there's somebody between me and the people at all times. Those are the priests, the one who stand between me and my people. There always needs to be a go-between. God always provides a mediator. We come to the New Testament, and obviously we've just celebrated Easter, the death, the burial, the resurrection. We're familiar with the book of Hebrews, where it says in chapter 9 that Jesus, through the Spirit, brought the blood to the holy place. The holy place not made with hands. And even today, now He sits at the right hand of the Father, mediating, going between us and God as our great high priest, so we can come before Him with boldness. Always, the people of God, their security is anchored not in their own work, not in their own performance, but in the security that's been secured for them through the work of the mediator. And Joseph becomes that mediator. It's the mediator who best understands both sides of the relationship. Joseph, growing up as a shepherd, going out and checking on his brothers as shepherds, thrown down in the pit, coat ripped off him as a shepherd, brought down into Egypt as a slave, finally raised to a position of authority and splendor within the house of Egypt, within the house of Pharaoh. Joseph is comfortable wearing sandals and a robe and carrying a staff, as comfortable as he is wearing his tuxedo in the courts of Pharaoh. Nobody's higher than Joseph. Nobody, except Pharaoh himself. And Pharaoh and Joseph are like that. Father and the Son are like that. And Jesus Christ steps down into this world, and He becomes every bit like us. In fact, the book of Hebrews says, He says He was tempted in all points just like we are, yet without sin. So He knows all of our weakness. He knows none of our sin. Joseph goes between Pharaoh and these despised shepherds, and he works on their behalf. The best mediator is the one who fits equally on both sides, just as our mediator does. Thus, he understands exactly what's acceptable, what's abominable. He uses that word, an abomination, to the Egyptians. The idea is it's loathsome, it's a stench to these people. Consequently, he's able to encourage Joseph, working as the mediator. You see him telling them, instructing them how you're supposed to answer. Well, tell them you're shepherds, your herdsmen. He's not trying to manipulate the way he says anything. He's telling them, in fact, guys, be honest about who you are. Isn't that what our mediator tells us as well? Guys, when you come to the one who's in this position of authority, why don't you just be honest? Why don't you just tell him, I'm a sinner. I have nothing to offer. Any arrangements that will be to my benefit won't be because I have anything to bring to the table. This is who I am. And let the mediator work out the terms of your agreement. It's the mediator who approaches the authority on behalf of the people. It's the mediator who presents the people along with their needs to the authority. And Jesus Christ does that. I thank the Lord for 1 John chapter 2. It says, and we have an advocate who goes before us and intercedes on our behalf. Jesus Christ presents the needs of the people before the authority. It's the mediator who secures the benefits of the authority. And when it's all done, verse 5, verse 6, Pharaoh says, here's my decision, guys. Joseph, here's what I want you to do. Just as the Father blesses us with every spiritual blessing, the next words in the book of Ephesians are in the heavenlies, in Christ. He gives us the blessings, but he gives them to us through the Son who's earned those blessings, who's secured those blessings on our behalf. It's the mediator and the position of the mediator that enables him to function then on behalf of the authority. At the end of verse 6, Pharaoh says to him, okay, let them settle in the land of Goshen. And Joseph, by the way, if you know any of the guys that would be able to handle a position of authority under my administration, why don't you go ahead and put them in that place? So like the New Testament. Now this isn't reading between the lines. God gives us these parallels on purpose, these types, these pictures that are fulfilled later on in Scripture. Jesus Christ does the same thing in the administration of the Father as the mediator. The Father says, I've got a kingdom. I'm building a kingdom. Jesus, this kingdom is yours. And it will be your authority to position men within my kingdom. It's my business, but you're over it. And so Jesus says, guys, I'm commissioning you. I'm sending you. I'm putting you in positions of authority. And I will be the one who determines who serves where within my Father's kingdom. But what an awesome thing. We're called to be different, and our security is based not on our work or our performance. It's based on the performance of our mediator. Thirdly, our purpose is to channel God's blessing to others. We're the people of the blessing. And we come to verse 7, it says, Joseph brought in Jacob, his father, and he stood him before Pharaoh. Pharaoh asks him a question. He says, so how many are the years of your life, the days of the years of your life? In verse 9, Jacob says to Pharaoh, the days of the years of my, he uses a different word there, my sojourning. My life, Pharaoh, you may not understand with all your pomp and circumstance, with all your plush and cush, with all of your rich and wealth, with all of your vibrant and tasty, with everything that you have, you may find it hard to believe. But my life isn't a settled life. In fact, the way I view my life is, the best analogy I can give is a sojourning. It's a trip. It's a trek. He kind of says it that way. My life is a trip, let me tell you. He says, the days of the years of my life are evil and they're short. You know what? They haven't attained the days of the years of the life of my fathers in their sojourning. And for just a minute, we find that Jacob does what we ourselves are so prone to do. It's easy for us, is it not, to make our stories about us, isn't it? So tell me a little bit about yourself. Well, you ever tell that to a kid? How you doing? And they raise their arm. And what are they asking you to do? Look at my boo-boo or whatever. How you doing? That's what Jacob does. Pharaoh says, so tell me a little bit about yourself.
Look at my. Let me tell you about how hard I had it in my life.
Really? Well, that's kind of ugly, Mr. 130-year-old guy. The Egyptians thought of a long life, a full life, the appropriate length of life to be about 110 years old. Already, Jacob's exceeded that. But he's comparing, he's looking around, he's saying, you know what? Compared to Grandpa, I don't have a long life. Compared to Dad, I don't. I'm only 130 years old. These guys are like 180. Good grief. I don't expect ever to get there. My eyesight's going. My teeth are falling out. My hip doesn't work the way it used to work anymore. We can associate with him. But it's all too easy for us to focus on ourselves. Alter says the story of Jacob is in sum a story with a happy ending, but it withholds a simple feeling of happiness. It's not a Walt Disney story as you read the story of Jacob, is it? You read Walt Disney stories, you watch Walt Disney stories, and the magic just kind of unfolds, and it leaves you just kind of thinking happy thoughts and going out and looking for pixie dust. That's not the way the Bible reads. This guy had a hard life. In fact, in many ways, it was harder than many of the forefathers who'd gone before him. And you get to the end, you read through the wrestlings, you read through the manipulations, and you read through the fact that Jacob himself was a part of his own problem. And to one degree, he kind of gets what he deserves, and God is working him through a process, and he's pressing him in from every side and ripping out the rug from underneath him so that all he has to hold on to is God himself. And he finds at last that God himself is all he needs to hang on to. So you come to the end of his story, and it's a good thing. It's great. It's grand. But it's not simple. It's complicated. It's complex. Here's the dilemma with Jacob, Ross says. He was the channel of divine blessing, but his days were few and filled with trouble. Many sins Jacob have had to confess the same. You ever feel like, I look at other people's lives, and I wish I had it as easy as that person. I wish I had the looks of that person. I wish I had the advantages of growing up in that home, of growing up in that culture, of growing up with that amount of wealth, of growing up with those opportunities in investments, of growing up with those opportunities with education. We start comparing ourselves with others. We say, it's just been tough. It's just been hard. But God's along the way only been giving you the right hard stuff, the right wrong stuff in your life to shape you, to mold you, to change you from who you are so you can be more usable for him. Jacob's statement shows us someone who's turned in on himself by life-shattering events that he had lost the ability to recognize anything else that God had given him. Jacob was still determined to define his life by his pain. I wonder sometimes if we look too much like the world because we're too willing to let our life be defined by our pain, by our past, by someone's sin against us, maybe by our own sin against others. That's not how God defines us. If in fact Jesus has paid the price for our sins and we've received that gift, it's all too easy for us to focus on the story of ourselves. But it's always appropriate in life's encounters to focus the story on that other person's relationship to the source of all blessing. And at the beginning and at the end of these short verses of Jacob meeting with Pharaoh, it says at the beginning, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And as he's getting to walk out, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh again. What does that mean?
It means like Jacob blessed Pharaoh, right?
Okay, good. Got it. Who blesses who? Does down bless up, or does up bless down? Up blesses down. Who's who in this relationship? Who's up? Pharaoh's up. Jacob's down. Jacob's a stinky, smelly shepherd. Jacob says, "Oh, great Pharaoh, I'm a priest of the Most High God. I've got something for you. I pray God's blessing on your life." What an amazing turn. And as Jacob has an opportunity to stand where his son stands every day, but he gets a chance once in a lifetime, he takes advantage of the opportunity and says, "Pharaoh, I just wish that you know my God. And I pray my God's blessing on your life." And he says, "Pharaoh, I've got a different God than you do. But I want you to know his blessings." And he brings the blessing to Pharaoh that God said this family would bring. Why? Because he's different. He maintains that distinction. We're going to move through the last couple ones very quickly this morning. Because the fourth reality is our condition is greater than those around us. The next several verses, from verse 13 down to verse 28, it tells how the famine is severe. And throughout the course of events, it says all the money is gone. Pharaoh has it. So all the livestock, from horses to donkeys to cattle to what, all go to Pharaoh. Then all the land. And then all the people. It says, our land and our bodies, literally it's the word carcasses. There's not much left to us, but you can have what's left. These dying, rotting carcasses that they're yours. And so it says three times, they became servants of Pharaoh. We will become servants of Pharaoh. You are in fact servants of Pharaoh. Nothing belongs to these people. But you come down to verse 27, and what's it say about the different people? Israel settles in the land of Egypt, in the land of Goshen, and they gained what? They gained possessions. Everything's being ripped out of the hands of the people who fit in this place. But the people who don't belong are gaining. In fact, it says they're growing, they're multiplying, they're receiving God's blessing in a place where you wouldn't expect it to be found. There's more we could say there, but for time we're going to just keep moving. Fifthly, our distinction is only tied to life in this world. You come to the end of this passage. Verse 29, when the time drew near that Israel must die, he calls his son Joseph and says, "Now listen, if I found favor in your sight, promise me not to bury me in this place where I don't fit. There's coming a day when I will lie with my fathers. There's coming a day when I will go to the place where I do fit, where I'll go to the people to whom I belong. And when I in fact go there, as a reality, I want you to take this carcass, this body, what's left of me, and I want you to symbolically take it to that place where I do belong. I'll already be there, but I want you to take what's left of me and put it in a cave because I belong to the people who've inherited the blessing. I don't belong in this place." It says at the end of this that he bows, verse 31, upon the head of his, and there's some difference. There's only three consonants in this word, and it's the original Hebrew didn't have the vowel pointing. So there's two options. It could be bed. It could be staff. The book of Hebrews translates this as he bowed upon his staff. This has he bowed upon his bed and goes into the next story where he's on his deathbed, literally. Probably the better rendition would be he bowed upon his staff, and here's why. Back in chapter 32, when he gets back into the land of Canaan, verse 10, he says, "God, there was a time in my life when I had nothing but a staff, a walking staff. And I walked away from here, and you brought me back with full hands." I've had the opportunity today to stand before Pharaoh. He says, "Tell me about your life." And all I can tell you is the fact that my life has been a pilgrimage with my staff in my hand, looking for a place because I never belonged anywhere on this planet. He comes down to the end of his life and he says, "Joseph, I still don't fit here, but I'm going to a place where I will fit. My pilgrimage will be done." He says, "Promise me, swear to me, promise me." He makes the promise. And he grabs that end of that staff and he worships God. He says, "God, this is where we've been together, and we're almost done. I'm ready to come home. You know, as people who are different, the difference is most noticeable when we are, in fact, different. And that difference is passed from Jacob to Joseph, who has to stand out in front of his brothers and say, now listen, guys, don't forget who you are. You don't fit here, and you're not supposed to fit here. And he's got to stand out and call them to that difference that is theirs. But you cannot pass along a distinction that you yourself don't possess. Joseph fits as the mediator because his heart was never tied to this world. His heart was tied to the people. Moses becomes a beautiful mediator because rather than embracing the wealth of Egypt, he wanted to be numbered with the children of God. I wonder if sometimes we don't miss our calling because we're too busy being tied up to be accepted and to fit in to this world around us. Book of Genesis to the book of Revelation says, if you're on this earth, you're not going to fit. So you might as well look like who you are